You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Pushes to Tina and to score an absolute stunner.
Forsberg delivers with certainty and Sweden look forward.
Well played, Scotland. Gareth Southgate's side with home advantage, with form advantage, but Scotland had the teamwork tonight.
A great goal from Perisic for Croatia, but a cagey encounter at Wembley, Chris.
Yeah, nothing to split the old enemy, England and Scotland. Also, Sweden squeeze past Slovakia.
And what about this fixture coming up? Portugal versus Germany. We get the latest from Munich.
Hugo Lloris looks ahead to France-Hungary in the same section. And we have an exclusive interview with the Spain legend, Gaizka Mendieta.
Welcome to the show presented by Qatar Airways. I'm Rob Daly and alongside me is my co-host Chris Parrott. Chris, how are we doing?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Rob.
What did you make of the day's action?
Yeah, well, what a superb win that was for Sweden, really igniting their challenge this summer, wasn't it? Patrick Schick, how about him, Rob? Scored again and he is really in the race to
that
be top
scorer.
That
bloodied nose.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just been caught, won the penalty, stepped up and took it so coolly. And Scotland, I think a really phenomenal performance from them, a performance to be proud of. And we saw at the end the Scotland fans who have made it to Wembley, and there are thousands more in London as well on the streets. They were very, very proud of that performance. That was a terrific point for them, I think.
We want your thoughts on the day's play as well. Use the hashtag EuroShow on Facebook, Instagram and especially Twitter. We're asking you for your favourite Euro captains. Chris, have you got a suggestion or two for us?
Well, to be honest with you, I think after the last week or so, I think Simon Kjær has to be right up there, given how he led from the front after that medical emergency for Christian Eriksen and everything he's done subsequently. If I look back, I always think of Greece 2004 and Theo Zagorakis and the way that he led his country, not just to a shock final appearance, but then to win it and to lift the trophy. So he'd be right up there as well. But, you know, over the years, there have been a lot, haven't there? Not necessarily Euro winners, but guys who you just look at them and think, wow, they embody the spirit of a whole nation.
Yeah, you've mentioned a couple of names have come up a lot on social media. Daniel saying Simon Kjær, Tram saying Zagorakis, as you did for Greece as well. And Fies has gone for Cristiano Ronaldo, saying vital in that run to the 2016 title. We'll get to more of those shortly. Hashtag EuroShow if you want to get in touch. But let's start with the oldest fixture in international football as England faced Scotland at Wembley. It was a much anticipated fixture and it was all very tight.
Well, he's hit the post. That's off for Scotland. First real effort of intent from England.
Yeah, similar story to the Croatia game when Foden hit the post early on.
Oh, that's a great save by Pickford from Stephen O'Donnell.
Yeah, I mean, he's seen it coming towards him. He's kept his eye on it and he's kept his shape.
Dyke's almost off the line by Reece James.
Reece James doing what all good defenders do.
Commentary there from Martin Tyler and the former England striker Alan Smith, who also played at Euro 92. And Alan joined us now. Alan, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Pleasure, Rob.
What are your immediate thoughts? I know you haven't had long to digest the game at Wembley, but how are you feeling about it?
Well, as an Englishman, I'm disappointed. I think most English people would be with that performance, with that result. England didn't hit the heights. There's no question about that. A large part of that was due to Scotland's fantastic discipline and resilience, determination. They never gave England a second, an inch, did they, really? Yeah. Some of those defensive performances, particularly, you know, Grant Hanley at the back in the middle of that three. Scott McTominay, I know he's played at the back before for Scotland, but he is playing out of position. And there's a big difference to being there, to being in central midfield where he normally is for Scotland and Manchester United. So right through the team, everybody gave it their all. Nobody got less than a 7.5 out of 10 for Scotland. And that made life really difficult for England.
Alan, do you think Scotland, when they look back at the game and see some of their chances, might think, you know what, we deserved all 3 points at Wembley?
Well, you think about David Marshall and what he had to do. Yeah. How many saves did he have to make? There was that scuffle at the end, but Stones hit the post, obviously, early on. But apart from that, you know, Pickford was the busier goalkeeper.
Yeah.
That Stephen O'Donnell volley, the early Che Adams one. It's not as if Scotland, you know, camped 11 men behind the ball for 90 minutes. They had their chances up the other end. So from that point of view, Steve Clark must be absolutely delighted. They would have worked hard over the last couple of days on their team shape and their actual tactics. And it's not often that it comes off absolutely perfectly, as it seemed to do tonight.
And it does seem to salvage their tournament a little bit going into that final group game. OK, let's go through it a little bit chronologically then. From a Scotland point of view, Billy Gilmore was surprisingly given a first start for his country. Kieran Tierney came back in, and as you mentioned, McTominay at centre-back. In terms of the Gilmore selection, that did seem to pay off from a Scotland point of view. He seemed very tidy in central midfield.
Yeah, I mean, he's a rare young talent, isn't he? He's played very little football for Chelsea this season, but I was reading this morning that Thomas Tuchel was on the phone to Steve Clark saying, you've got to pick this lad for the squad.
Really?
Because he's more than talented enough for it. And he proved that tonight. He seems to be one of those characters that nothing much fazes him. He'll have the ball in tight areas. He'll receive it. He'll control it and move it on. I suppose physically was the only question. Could he last? And they brought him off towards the end. But it was a good call to play him. You know, there might have been a few raised eyebrows about him being included. But I think on the night, with what was required, he was a good man to have in the middle of the park there, somebody that he could feed it through the lines and not waste possession. So for Steve Clark, yeah, a great option now moving forward.
I think, Alan, he'd only played 39 minutes of senior football for Scotland before being thrown in at Wembley, which says a lot about the confidence that Steve Clark has in him. He also picked Shea Adams alongside Lyndon Dykes, which I think had been a bit of a debate in Scotland over the last month or so as to whether he should do that. And that seemed to work, didn't it?
It did. I haven't seen too much of Lyndon Dykes over the last season or so. But he impressed me. He started the game quickly and aggressively. I think the very first challenge of the match, he climbed up above Luke Shaw and kneed him in the side. he won quite a few headers. He was aggressive. He got about the pitch. He was a handful for England centre-halves. And Che Adams, you know, again, movement was good. He always works hard. You'll be disappointed that he didn't score tonight. But the two of them, you know, that's a strike force that's going to make any defence have a worry, because they're in your face. It's just whether they've got the goals in them at this level. But work rate, 10 out of 10.
Chris, they did change things up at fullback. That was only the changes that Gareth Southgate made to his team. What did you make to that with James and Shaw coming in for Walker and Trippier? Were you surprised there wasn't a little bit more in terms of freshening up the 11?
I don't think so, because I think that forward players ahead of them has actually now started for England reasonably regularly, including in March in the FIFA World Cup qualifiers, and then, of course, in the opening game, which England won. And I could see why he wanted maybe Luke Shaw, a left-footed, for a bit more balance at left-back. And I think we did see in the game what Reece James brings. Alan, I mean, you were a centre-forward. How much would you like to play with Reece James, given some of those balls that he swings in?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm sure that was a part of the reason he was there. And defensively, he's come on a lot, I think. I mean, he was superb in the Champions League final. Mm. Hardly anything got past him that night. But he got into some good positions. But no matter the quality of the ball, there was a Scotland defender more often than not getting his head or his foot to it. But he did his cause no harm. I mean, a lot of talk about the four right-backs that were picked. Obviously, Alexander-Arnold dropped out. But perhaps Reece James is at the head of the queue at the moment. Kyle Walker, he struggled in the first half, especially against Croatia. He had a bit of a stinker. He gave the ball away a lot. And for an experienced player, that was surprising. But Reece James, he's on the ascendancy.
What did you make to the tempo with which England played, Alan? It was a touch slow, perhaps a byproduct of a long season, or what do you think?
Yeah, it was far too slow. Too many sideward passes. England at the best are getting the ball forward. They're knocking it through the lines from back to midfield to up top. Kane didn't get the ball into his feet quickly enough, and that made it a little easier for Hanley and co. It was laborious. It was pedestrian. And I thought, you know, once Gareth Southgate had got into him at half-time, I was hoping they'd come out and there'd be a bit more zip to the play, a bit more tempo. But after a quicker start in the first few minutes, and he went back and they reverted to type, and it made it easier for Scotland than it should have been. That's what I'll say, as well as Scotland did. They weren't stretched to the extent that I thought England would stretch them on the night.
I think I saw a stat at half-time that Harry Kane had just 10 touches in the whole of...
Really?
The first half, yeah, exactly. And I think only one inside Scotland's penalty area. Now, we saw him come off as well, Alan. What did you make to that? And overall, Harry Kane so far at this summer's Euro maybe hasn't quite hit the heights that he would have hoped to thus far. Of course, he's got, you know, plenty more opportunities to do so in the coming weeks.
Well, in a way, I was pleased that Gareth Southgate did bring him off, because if he hadn't of it, it's almost as if he's bowing to his captain and, you know, this guy's undroppable, we can't possibly substitute him. But that needed to be done. As for Kane himself, only he can tell you how he's feeling, but physically he didn't look right. There was a moment in the second half when he's tried to accelerate away, and I think Gilmore got back. And Kane, at his best when he's playing well, he wouldn't allow anybody to get goal side of him again, whether it's through his body positioning or his acceleration. So something's not quite right, and it is a concern, I think, for Southgate moving forward. I'm sure they'll have a chat in the next few days and just ask Kane how he's feeling. But he's been a bystander, hasn't he, really, for two games, and that is so unusual for him, because we all think for England he's indispensable. We need him playing well. So that is a concern.
Yeah, you'd guess so. OK, let's get the fan point of view. Lindsay Hooper has been at the UEFA Fan Village in London for us.
Gary, you stayed behind in the rain and I really appreciate it. You're a Scotland fan. Your performance at 0-0 must have been pleasing in some respects.
I would say we could have got the win today, to be honest with you. You know, I think we performed well and we just put England in their place, to be honest with you. They're very average. Scotland were better. We should have got the win, to be fair.
There was the goal line clearance, Rhys James's header. Was that an agonising one for you?
Of course it was. You know, you always want your team to score, but at the same time, I don't think England offered much either. Scotland should have won today.
1 point, is that going to be enough?
Yes, it is, because we're going to get three off Croatia.
You're very confident about that. You're nodding and looking very assured to me.
Without a doubt, of course we are. We're going to get 3 points and 3 goals off them.
I love the confidence. Thank you for stopping.
Thank you.
I'm with Mark, an England fan who's endured the rain and endured the fans out. What sort of performance?
It was a professional performance. It wasn't necessarily the best or worst. It was a job done well. You know, in my opinion, England have qualified to the next round. Scotland may be able to follow still in second or third place, but England can go through. And that's what you're here to do, do a job. They've done the job in the first game against Croatia. They got the 3 points. They've got the extra point today. 4 points, the marker. That takes you through. That'll take you to the next round. We don't want to get into the group of death before in the next round against the runners up there. So, yeah, it's promising. It's good.
Lindsay Hooper in the UEFA Fan Village in London. And I suppose the winning the group question hangs over the group a little bit in terms of who you could play in the next round. 4 points for England. I suppose from Gareth Southgate's point of view, it would have been a very bad scenario had they... Because he didn't throw everything at Scotland, did he, at the end? He certainly didn't want to have a goal go against them at the other end and suddenly not only lose, but give 3 points to another team in the group.
No, quite. It's a balancing act, isn't it? As much as you want to win it and ensure qualification... you don't want to lose it in those circumstances. So sometimes you've got to accept a performance and accept a result and think, OK, we'll take that point. It was a deflating night for England, I think, because there's been so much optimism around the whole England thing with the attacking talent that we've got. So that has just robbed the project, if you like, of that little bit of hope and optimism. But they can bounce back from that, and they need to bounce back from that.
Get your thoughts into us on the show. Hashtag Euroshow on social media. We're asking you for your best ever captains. And Alan, I think it's your turn. You've played under some of the best in the business. Who would come to mind for you?
Well, my club captain was Tony Adams for the entire spell at Arsenal. He was very much a vocal captain. I think he took a lot from Terry Butcher, actually, with England, who I also played under when he wore the armband. He was very vocal before games, you know, shouting out, maybe as much to inspire himself as everybody else, but on the pitch as well. You know, he was somebody that, even when he first came into the side, Tony, he was telling David O'Leary, who was a good, you know, 8 years older than him and had 200 appearances for Arsenal. He was telling him what to do in front of the North Bank and just tapping me on the backside, you know. Oh, well done, David, good clearance. He was that kind of character.
Would he tear into you if he felt, you know, at half-time, if he felt things weren't going well? Or would he leave a manager to do
he'd,
that?
He'd like normally leave the manager to do that, right, yeah. Right. Yeah, because sometimes you say, oh, shut up, Tone, you know. get on with your own game. You're having a stinker, you know. It was one of those.
And what about England?
Well, Brian Robson, when I first got into the England setup, he was the skipper, and people asked me about some of the best players I've played with, and Robbo was certainly up there because he had everything. As well as being a leader, he was two-footed, he was brave, physically he could get up and down the pitch, and he was such a fantastic finisher. I remember crossing and shooting exercises when the ball had come to him on the half volley, on the volley, either foot, he'd be slotting it into the corner, and he was just something to behold. And maybe that part of his game people didn't see or they didn't take so much notice of, but he was brilliant. And Terry Butcher as well. I played the night that he cut his head and he came off with a bloodied headband. And
iconic, yeah.
Yeah, we'd all gone into the dressing room early and Butch came. I think he'd been having, you know, the press had been wanting to take pictures of him, that famous picture out on the pitch. So he's lolloped in last and we've all stood up and given him a good round of applause. You know, it was a great moment that to salute him.
Keep your suggestions coming in using the hashtag Euroshow. By the way, we're getting reaction to England-Scotland. Let's hear from England's goalkeeper, Jordan Pickford.
Yeah, obviously, it's a massive game, you know, and we want to take all 3 points every game we play and we want to win the game. But the biggest thing tonight was, if we can't win it, don't get beat. And, you know, the resilience of keeping a clean sheet from the lads, that's what we did, you know. We've got 4 points. We're still in control of the group. We've got to get ready for Czech Republic now. I thought I did a good performance, you know. I think I made one good save and come and commanded a few crosses. They put a lot of pressure on it. But it's just about being in that moment as a goalkeeper and helping your teammates out. And I felt like I did that tonight, and another clean sheet, which I'm pleased with.
Yes, two clean sheets for Jordan Pickford. I mean, it's been a season where talk about his position as England a number one. What have you made of him so far, Alan?
Yeah, I mean, I think he ended the season really well for Everton. He cut out the mistakes that had blighted some of the campaign. But there's always been a little doubt about him because he's always been that kind of erratic keeper. You never quite know what he's going to do, but maybe he's maturing. We forget how young he is, actually, for a keeper. And he was good tonight, I thought. He made that really important stop from O'Donnell. When he had to come and punch, he did it, and he did it decisively. Some of those corners, there's about 15 men grouped around, aren't there? And the ball's all slippery and greasy, and so he did well, and that is reassuring, I think, going forward. So that is a plus point.
Let's hear from the Scotland midfielder Callum McGregor next.
I think you can feel the energy in the stadium. Performance I thought was first class. Every single player was outstanding to a man, and that's the type of performance you need when you come here to get something in the group to keep us alive. And you know, we look forward to Tuesday now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're always disappointed when you don't start, but you know, you have to accept it. It's a manager's decision, and then when you get the chance to play, you just have to do as well as you can for the team. And you know, I thought everybody was excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. We have to harness this energy, remember it, recover well, and then, like you said, it's a big match on Tuesday. The objective tonight was, after the game, we were still in the group. We've done that, so you know, we look forward to Tuesday, and like I said, we just harness the energy.
Callum McGregor there. The Scottish fans took over London today, and you could hear them in the background there. More on that game shortly, but Alan mentioned it a moment ago. Croatia, of course, also in action in Group D after losing to England in their opening game. They salvaged a draw against the Czech Republic at Hampden Park in Glasgow.
Patrick Schick to land a blow of his own, and he does so with deadly precision. Perisic to Tina, and to score.
Well, a vital equaliser for Croatia as they managed to get up and running at this Euro. Ivan Perisic with that belting goal shortly after half-time. Alan, I suppose it's been a tricky tournament in truth for Croatia so far. In fact, and you might be able to back this up in terms of what Zlatko Dalic, their head coach, was saying. He says, we don't know why we're playing too so, not with enough energy. And there seems to be a bit of worry in that camp that they can't quite click into gear yet.
There's a lot of players there that have been there a long time. And I said, they've come to the end of the cycle. They need it freshening up. But yeah, for Dalic, he'll be concerned because, you know, against England, they didn't do themselves justice, and there's some worrying moments today as well. Perisic, as you say, he's still a fine player.
Yeah, he
dug them out of a hole. Not many players give Kufal a tough time, but the West Ham right back,
he turned him inside out for that goal, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he's had a magnificent season for West Ham, and I commentated on a lot of those games, and he hardly got beaten, Kufal, in his debut campaign for the Hammers. But yeah, Perisic turned him inside out. So yeah, that's you know, that's one plus point for them. But for Scotland, they'll look at it and think, yeah, why not? We can have a go at them.
I love how hard Perisic hit that ball. That hit the back of the net and then it popped out almost back to the edge of the box. He struck it with such power. Just following on from Rob there mentioning what Zlatko Dalic said after the game, Ivan Perisic was maybe even more forward when he said, we have to show more against Scotland. We're not playing well. Now, from your point of view as an ex-player, Alan Smith, if a senior member of the squad had said that and then came back into the dressing room, do you think that would galvanise the group ahead of what is now a massive third group game for Croatia?
Well, I think he's got the standing to be able to say it, and his teammates should respect that, and they should act on it. I think he's won and done enough in the game to be able to speak out in that fashion. I mean, they have been stymied by a lack of quality through the middle up front. Mandzukic retiring, they haven't been able to replace him. Kramaric has tried and failed, came off today. So that's been difficult for them. If the talent isn't there for a coach, it makes the job more difficult. But Perisic, he should be able to say those kind of things, I think, that kind of criticism.
You mentioned it. Terry Butcher, obviously, in his iconic blooded headband. I think the blooded nose and Patrick Schick going up to the camera to celebrate his score penalty. Of course, got caught by the elbow of Dejan Lovren. Was the penalty was looked at and given, and then he stepped up with basically blood pouring out of his nose, really. But, I mean, he's having a fine tournament after his iconic goal against Scotland the other day as well.
Yeah, well, you get players that nobody really would have earmarked, and they burst onto the scene, don't they? Scalacci-like in Italia 90. Yeah. He'll be thinking about the golden boot now, Schick, won't he? He'll certainly be thinking about the goal of the tournament. I don't think anybody's going to beat that.
No, surely not. Surely not.
So it's great for centre-forward. He'll be full of confidence. He might just get a multi-million-pound move out of this at the end of this tournament.
Yeah. That it was an incredible goal. Alan, in your career, how many times did you see? Did you ever play with someone who scored from the halfway line? Were you ever in a game where that? Did you ever try it even? I mean,
well, I didn't. do you know what? Well, I mean, they are a rarity, aren't they? And not many players try it. That's partly why they're a rarity. So difficult. I was at West Ham when Wayne Rooney scored from a long way out. I think he was just inside his own half. But that goal, I mean, the way he's curled it in, he's made Marshall look foolish, but it was just a piece of brilliance.
Certainly was. Patrick Schick now on three goals, top scorer at Euro, and looking to become the first Czech top scorer at the tournament since Milan Baroš, who had that sort of breakthrough tournament as well at Euro 2004. Okay, by the way, Ivan Perisic, and Alan was talking about his stature there. He becomes the first Croatian to score in each of his last four major international tournaments. There was also action in Group E on Friday as well, with Sweden beating Slovakia 1-0 in St. Petersburg, but it took a penalty to win it.
In by Lustig, Kajsan! He's gone over to Bravka, it's a penalty of Sweden! Forsberg delivers with certainty, and Sweden look forward!
Well, how they needed it. Emil Forsberg with the winning goal. Our Sweden team reporter, Sujay Dutt, was at St. Petersburg Stadium watching this, and he's with us now. Hi, Sujay.
Oh, thanks for having me.
How do you feel about Sweden's win over Slovakia?
I felt, looking at it, watching it, they're constantly improving, I'd say, from half by half, starting with the first half against Spain, which was not very good, till the second half against Slovakia, which was their best, especially the last 25 minutes of that game, particularly. I think Sweden were at their best during this tournament, so they're peaking, it seems.
Two clean sheets in a row now as well, and that must be something that will really please the coach.
He would be. Jan Andersson definitely likes to see a solid defensive effort from the goalkeeper up to the strikers, who also take part in that. So, yeah, he'll be happy with that.
An outstanding performance from Alexander Isak. Have you managed to catch up with him? He nearly got his opening goal of Euro with that fine run and save from the goalkeeper.
Yeah, that was close, but I'm sure he'll get plenty more chances. I did manage to speak to him. He was happy with the Star of the Match award, of course, proud of it as well. But he's very much a team player, so he's happy that the team's winning, regardless if he's scoring or not.
What's been the reaction to his first two performances at Euro 2020 back in Sweden? Because I think the rest of Europe has been mightily impressed by him.
Yeah, he's the darling of Swedish football right now, no doubt. And he sort of disappeared off the radar for a while when he moved to Dortmund, but has really resurrected his career since then. And he's still just 21. So, I mean, but that was for a year that he was off the charts, but he's back definitely now.
What's head coach Janne Andersson had to say about the win?
Another game plan followed to perfection, just like the Spain one was. This time they knew they'd have more of the ball. And gradually, in the second half especially, they also upped the tempo, which created more chances. So he was happy with that.
And just one more, 4 points now for Sweden. They are pretty close to the last 16. They may well already have enough. How confident do you think this group of players is right now going forward?
They seem to be grounded. They know their abilities, but know that there's at least 90 more minutes of tough football against Poland to secure this place. So, yeah, they know their job.
A good win for Sweden in St. Petersburg. Sujay, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our Sweden correspondent Sujay Dutt there. Alexander Isak mentioned Chris, and with good reason. I mean, he was excellent today. He looks really good. And there were question marks that he'd even start for Sweden at this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, he was really, really sharp in that 0-0 draw in Seville, wasn't he? Had one cleared off the line. Only 22, or turns 22 in September. Born in Solna, right next to the old Rosunda Stadium, which I know Alan played there in Euro 92. And as Sujay alluded to, they're quite an interesting career so far. Came through at AIK Solna, who he supports. Then he got his move to Borussia Dortmund. I know you watched him there, Rob.
Didn't get a chance.
Didn't quite happen. He had a loan spell in the Eredivisie at Willem II. And really now, since he's gone to Real Sociedad, he's emerging as that kind of next-generation striker. And I wanted to ask Alan about that, actually, because he's big enough to be a target man, but he's also quick enough to get in behind. From what you've seen of Alexander Isak, you must like what you see, I guess.
Well, yeah, and the fact that youth is on his side, and you know, as a younger player, you come into a tournament like this, you're not quite sure whether you're actually good enough. Portray this air of confidence, but underneath, they're thinking, "Well, how's this going to go?" but when you get a taste of it and a taste of success, you know, your confidence builds, your belief, and you become twice the player, and you can see them pumping out the chest and feeling, "Yeah, I do belong on this stage." And that seems to be the case with him.
Let's see if he can get his goal at the tournament. Plenty more to come, including an exclusive interview with Gaizka Mendieta. And we head to Munich ahead of the big one. It is Portugal versus Germany.
You're listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.
Okay, to get going here, Chris, do you want to set us up with Saturday's fixtures?
Yeah, I mean, what a day we've got in prospect. Starts in Budapest. It will be near full as well. Another cracking atmosphere for Hungary against France. And a win for the world champions, Rob, and they will be through with a match to spare. Then in that same, frankly ridiculous group, it's to Munich. Portugal against Germany. A win for Portugal and they are through. And Germany really would be playing catch up then. And then we finish with the small matter of Spain against Poland in Seville. A loss for Poland and they won't be able to finish in one of the top two positions in that particular section.
That's one of the best days of the group stage.
Yeah, I think
great
it is.
Games. Yeah, OK, well, let's start with that huge match between Portugal and Germany, the Fussball Arena mentioned. Germany need something from the game, really, after losing their opener to France. Whilst Portugal will want to build on their 3-0 win over Hungary, Portugal defender Ruben Dias says his side will need to be at their best.
Our expectations are, well, we're going to be facing an amazing, one of the best teams in this Euros. We're also one of the best teams, to be sure, and we're fully aware that even if we started off on the right foot, we need to have our feet planted firmly on the ground. But we have to realize that we have to be better than them, and better than we were in order to win this match.
England forward Alan Smith with us here. Ruben Dias there. I mean, they have so much quality. The part of the talk around this game, Alan, and it's only one win in 9 Euro meetings with Germany for Portugal, that they're favourites going into this one in Munich. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think they should be. Yeah. I think they're a better team, more quality throughout from back to front. Germany, our side, just searching for a bit of identity, I think. We saw that against France. He's gone to three at the back after playing four for a bit, and that looked a bit awkward, a bit cumbersome. Didn't work going forward. So plenty for Joachim Löw to get his teeth into. But against Portugal, you know, littered with talent, and at the top of it, it's easy to keep talking about Cristiano Ronaldo because he just grabs the headlines every time, doesn't he? And he just won't let go of his standing at the top of world football. He's just determined to keep on going, and he might, at the back of his mind, think this could be my last tournament, because you don't know injuries, what's awaiting him around the corner. So he seems to be playing every match like it could be his last, and the performance against Hungary showed that.
Two goals, the all-time record scorer in Euro history. Let's get the German point of view now from Philipp Röber. He is UEFA's Germany reporter, and he joins us now. Thanks for coming back on the show, Philipp.
Hello, glad to be here.
Okay, so what has the mood in the Germany camp been since the defeat to France?
Yeah, it was a bit of a frustrating evening for them. And as far as I know from the players, they also went to breakfast with a little bit of a hanging shoulders, as we say here. They weren't quite happy with that result, obviously, even though they put a lot of effort in. But I think they haven't lost their spirit. They are probably very happy with some of the things that they did against France, did a lot of good work defensively. So it isn't all negative.
And you've been watching them train in Munich. Anything that you think you might have picked up watching them out on the pitch to suggest how they might be thinking about playing against Portugal?
I think Joachim Löw will actually stick with the team. And he's looking for consistency at the moment. He wants the team to be rehearsed. And maybe they will take a little bit more risk against Portugal. But on the whole, I don't expect any changes.
And what's the latest with Leon Goretzka?
Yeah, he could be an option. But they have already ruled out that he will be starting. They said that maybe he can be an option for the second half and play 20 or 30 minutes.
It'd be great to see him on the pitch at some stage. I understand you spoke with Matthias Ginter as well, back at the base camp before moving on to Munich with the team. In what spirit is he, and did he have anything in particular of note to say?
Yes, Matthias Ginter was in good spirits, actually. He pointed out that they were pretty happy with a lot of things that they had practiced in training for the past 2 weeks and then implemented on the pitch. He sounded very optimistic going forward and said there's a lot of courage to take from the match against France to take into Portugal and then Hungary. But yeah, we were halfway through our interview when we were interrupted by some loud cheering and actually commentating by a megaphone. And it turned out that just behind a wooden fence that the German team had been starting to play darts. And funnily enough, they had a megaphone and a player was commentating and counting the scores. And it was none other than Thomas Müller.
Of course. So I was going to guess that.
We actually had some Radio Müller in live action.
Was he any good at commentating?
I think he was pretty good at counting the scores. It sounded very fluent, but there was a wooden fence between us, so I didn't climb over to take a peek.
Well, obviously, he was part of that attack that failed to find a way through against France. Seeing some of the quotes from Jogi Löw, he says, if we can be more vigorous up front, we will be able to beat Portugal. Why do you think they couldn't find a way past Les Bleus the other day?
Just because the opponent was too clever. France just did a world-class job defending, you know, sitting on that 1-0 lead and sticking to their tactics, very disciplined, waiting for the counter-attack to finish the game off. I think they did everything correctly. And, you know, at parts, if Karim Benzema, he was 25 meters in front of Hugo Lloris and he was the furthest outfield player of France. So that tells you a lot about how they really made the box compact and how they just didn't allow Germany a way through. So I think it would have been hard for any team to get through there. And yeah, Germany couldn't find a solution.
And just finally, Philipp, we're asking everyone tonight about great Euro captains for their country. So from a German perspective, is there any player from the illustrious past that particularly springs to mind?
Oh, we've had a few good ones.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, I would probably have to go with Jürgen Klinsmann just because he was the one picking up the trophy from the Queen in Wembley in 1996. And that obviously caused for the for the last time they got to pick up the trophy and lift the trophy at the Euro. And he was a great striker. I always enjoyed watching him play, and he was kind of like an idol of my youth. So I would have to go with Jürgen Klinsmann.
Superb answer, Philip. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. All the best.
Philip Rober, UEFA's Germany correspondent there for the camp with some great insight. Alan, I know you covered Germany through the Nations League, right? I mean, what are your thoughts on what you had seen up until this point, up until this tournament?
It was quite weird, really, commentating on them because of some of the performances where they were totally at sixes and sevens, looking so leaky at the back. It was untrue, no matter what Joachim Löw tried. They just looked devoid of belief, really, and confidence, the kind of belief that we associate with them through the years. So it was strange, but, you know, every club, every team, every country has their down years, their times when they have to rebuild again, and they've tried to do it. You know, I've seen matches where he's picked Sané, Werner and Gnabry. It's great pace through the middle. And, you know, if that clicks, it's a nightmare for any defence. And sometimes it has clicked. He moved away from that the other night with... you bring Thomas Müller back, we were just saying, and I'm a huge fan of his. And his experience, I think, is important for them. It's hard to leave him out. Havertz is a different one for me. As talented as he is, sometimes I think, well, what is he? What does he give you? He's an elegant, languid player, but I think he's got to be in the right formation to get the best out of him. So again, a bit like Southgate for Joachim Löw, you know, what kind of team is he going to pick for the next game, for that Poland one, that Portugal one?
Yeah, well, also in Group F, the world champions France are looking to make it two wins from two at Euro. They take on Hungary in Budapest following their brilliant opening day victory over Germany. And captain Hugo Lloris wants more of the same.
I think it's important for France to keep the same dynamic in terms of performance, in terms of results. After Germany result, it's important to keep up the confidence as a team. But we know that it's going to be a big task in front of the Hungarian crowd, in a full stadium, against a very good opponent, well organized. At this level, any details can matter. And I think we try to prepare the game as good as we can, and we are focused on the win.
And here comes Hernandez in towards Mbappe, and it ends up in the back of Germany's net. Hummels looks to the sky in frustration.
Germany game was a high-level game. When we talk about details, it was about details. The most important was to win the first game, you know, to start the competition in a good condition, with a good confidence. Now is the second step. Keep the same solidarity, keep the same focus on the performance, and try to improve, you know, ball in the feet, ball in possession, because tomorrow it will be necessary to manage the game in the way we want, against a well-organized team. We never know the story of the game, but we know what we can expect, and we try to prepare the game in this way.
The France captain, Hugo Lloris there. Alan, how impressed have you been by France? And we look at that front three, right, and we think, they're terrifying, but actually defensively they look so solid in Munich against Germany.
Yes, they did, and we talk so often about world-class attacking talent, but more often than not, you know, tournaments are won by the side with the best defence. And although they weren't pushed as much as they might be in the future in this tournament, they handled it really well. There's a great understanding across that back line, that back four, I think. And Didier Deschamps knows his best four, and he knows exactly how he wants them to play, and they've all got the T-shirt, haven't they? So that's a great thing to have going into a tournament. They can soak up pressure. They can take a step back if they want. They can, the likes of Kim Bembe can just step onto it and nick the ball. He's got a good partnership with Varane. So it wasn't a spectacular performance from France, but it was an ominous one, I would say, in the way that they handled that challenge against Germany.
And one more successful performance and they will be through to the last 16. We can get some more insight now on the French camp because our UEFA reporter David Crossan joins us now from Budapest. Thanks for coming on the show, David.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So how is the camp? I know you've been with the French team now for a number of weeks, and of course a win, and they'll be through to the last 16. I guess they must be in pretty confident mood.
It's an incredibly happy and incredibly confident camp. They know how good they are. And I spoke to Lucas Hernandez yesterday, and he said to me, everyone knows exactly where they should be on the pitch at all times. And I think that really came through in that win against Germany, which was a heroic defensive effort. I actually haven't seen France defend like that as a team for a very long time, including players who don't like defending as much, like Mbappe. I mean, Griezmann sets the tone in that. I think only Conte ran further than Griezmann on Tuesday night, but Mbappe was defending the way I've never seen him defend before.
And in terms of Antoine Griezmann, a landmark, of course, ahead of this game.
Yeah, he's going to line up for the 50th time in a row under Didier Deschamps.
That's staggering,
for France.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. He's a record breaker in that respect for Le Bleu. And Didier Deschamps was as gushing as I've ever heard him, actually, about an individual, saying that Antoine is up there with the best at European and world level. He looks after himself so well. He just wants to run and run and run and play for the team. And that even though he's not 20 anymore, he can still do it because he's the model professional.
When I look and hear from Didier Deschamps, in terms of his coaching expertise, and he's a World Cup winner, do you think the way he needs to manage this group of players is almost as important as the way that he needs to tactically set them up?
I think the players have the utmost respect for Deschamps. They all know that they have to do a job for the team, otherwise they won't play. You look at the names on the France team sheet, and I wrote an article for the website before the Germany game, inevitably focusing on the three attackers who I labelled the three musketeers, but we didn't see that much of them in attack. We saw them more in defence. Mm. And the word that keeps coming back when you speak to Deschamps is balance. He says, yeah, we've got all that talent, but the main thing is that we're balanced as a team and we play as a team.
We saw the atmosphere in Budapest for Hungary's first game against Portugal. I guess the players and Deschamps will be looking forward to playing in pretty much a near full stadium. For many of them, that will be the first time that's happened for, what, almost 18, 19 months?
Yeah, they're really looking forward to it. I think they're wary of the heat in Hungary, which I think is going to have a major impact on the game because it was about 33 degrees and it felt hotter.
Wow.
And Didier Deschamps was wiping the sweat off his face after just 10 minutes of doing the interviews with the various rights holders out on the pitch. And I think the conditions are going to be very, very tough. But they are looking forward to playing in front of a crowd, and it won't just be a Hungarian crowd. I've bumped into a lot of French people around Budapest, and I think there are going to be at least 4,500 French supporters there. They love playing in front of fans in Munich, and they are excited about playing in front of a full stadium, even though they know that the overwhelming majority will be wanting them to lose.
Very, very interesting. Great answer there, and super to have your time, David Crossan. That was wonderful to hear. David Crossan, our France reporter out in boiling hot Budapest. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure.
Great stuff from David, as always. Alan Smith with us on the show. Alan, in terms of Karim Benzema, there was a bit I was reading in the French media today about the fact that they have had strikers at tournaments who haven't scored. Guy Varche, 98, and of course Giroud 3 years ago, and they won those tournaments. He hasn't scored yet. How important is it after this sort of exile from the national team for him to actually get up and running in this France team?
Well, yeah, that would be the ideal, wouldn't it, if they end up winning without him scoring. I don't suppose he'd be too bothered. but we've seen him, you know, pull up trees for Real Madrid for so many years now. To be the number nine for a club of that stature for so long, I mean, it defies belief, the standards you've got to attain season in, season out, when clubs like that are always looking for the next big thing, aren't they?
It says a lot, doesn't
forward.
It? Yeah.
And he seems to have got better over the last 3 years or so. But, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think he'll stay goalless for too long if France continue to play as they are and to dominate matches. Good to see him back. You know, obviously what went on is between him and the manager and French Federation, but they've let bygones be bygones, and they've got back a world-class forward.
A ridiculous front line they've got for their game against Hungary in Budapest on Saturday. There's also a match in Group E in the late kickoff. Spain take on Poland in Seville, with neither team having won their opening games. Poland lost to Slovakia, while Spain drew 0-0 with Sweden, despite having 75% of the possession. Shall we hear from a Spain legend then? Yeah, why not? UEFA's Joe Walker has been speaking to the former Spain player Gaizka Mendieta, and he began by giving his reaction to that opening day draw.
In general terms, I like the team in terms of how they move the ball around, was dynamic. I was looking at some stats and these maps. I'm not a very big fan of it, but they give you an idea, and actually they give you like how Spain possession was very horizontal and how we not really penetrate through the wall that Sweden built. And that kind of summarized the game. If credit to Sweden, the way they defended for 90 minutes, almost scored twice in a clear chances. The tactics worked well, as what they wanted to do. For us, I think a bit more like we did in the second half, a bit more runs behind, more dynamic, moving with the ball, trying to break those lines. As when you're defending well, you need to ask questions to those defenders or midfielders. I don't think we did enough in the first half. Yeah, we're all happy with how we play. We created chances. I think that's what you plan when you're thinking ahead of the game. How do we create chances for our midfielders, strikers? And we did. Unfortunately, we didn't transform them. I think that's the only downside of the game.
And you said that, you know, you created a lot of chances. I think one of the main talking points before the game was maybe that Gerard Moreno was not in the starting 11. Did the 11 surprise you at all?
It did not, in the way that it was kind of the 11 that I would have brought in. Again, it depends on your game plan. And if you bring both, I would have probably think about bringing both Morata and Moreno together. But then you're thinking, okay, well, what shall I do in the second half? But you still have Oyarzabal. You go options. But I think only one striker, it made it easier for them. I think that's what Luis Enrique was looking for, was Pedri midfield, dynamic, direct, between the lines, passes. Ferran Torres the same, which was probably Pedri, was either him or Thiago, as we saw before with Luis Enrique. And not many, since Busquets wasn't there, of course, Rodri was going to play. And at the back, similar approach to what he did in the preparation games. So not many surprises, not very surprised at all in terms of team selection.
Do you think that there's, you mentioned that they could possibly play together and work well. Do you think there's a chance that Luis Enrique will start them against Poland together?
I think there is. Again, it depends. It's hard to get into Luis' minds and the way he thinks. It's not very usual way of thinking. It's very strategic in the way he sees things. But I think there is a chance. I think there is, because both work very well. Moreno has shown in Villarreal, can play with other strikers. He's very mobile. He's very dynamic in what he makes the moves. Could play also on the side. Same as Morata. Morata could play on the wide side and leave Gerrard as a number nine. So them two could play together. It's a matter of question. Would he play like with four at the midfield and then let them do up front? Or I see very unlikely that he changes to 4-4-2 rather than the players. I think he's quite happy with what he saw the other day. So I would not expect many changes in terms of personnel. Personally, I would like to see maybe bring two strikers and see what happens. Poland is a team that doesn't defend as well as Sweden. And I expect them to be a bit more open up for what we saw in the first game. So I don't think Poland will present us that difficult.
And well, moving on to Poland on match day two, then there'll be a bit of a wounded animal as well, won't they? I don't think many people thought that they would lose their opening game. So for them, it's a must-win game, but also for Spain too, I guess.
Yeah, it is. We've seen like one game gives you or takes away all the opportunities to qualify. So Poland, yeah, this league needs a win. Was a bit surprised with them, but with Poland, it's a team that normally will try to play decent football, not very disciplined in terms of, like I said, I don't expect them to be like Sweden, because I think they like to play in the way by having a bit more possession and being more open up, leaving more spaces. What we saw Sweden doing the other day, there's not many teams that couldn't do that, like defend for 90 minutes in that way. So I think that would be easier. It would be better for us, a team like Poland. And Poland, they have to win, so I think that they will have to take some risks in the second game.
Great to get the thoughts of guys Gamendieta there, speaking to UEFA's very own Joe Walker. We've got Alan Smith with us on the show. Alan, in terms of the striker position, Luis Enrique, you know, we saw Alvaro Morata miss a number of chances the other day, and he was asked about whether he would play. Luis Enrique said, "I will pick Morata and 10 other players." What do you make to him backing his centre-forward?
That would tell me that the centre-forward needs reassurance that he's low on confidence. That's
the subtext of doing that, you think?
Yeah, that's what I read into it, yeah. Don't worry, son, you're playing. I've got faith in you. You are a good player. Don't worry about those misses. So maybe he's seen him after that game and seen that Morata was a little down, as you would be, having had those chances and spurned them. And so he's tried to give him a lift. I've always looked at him. I looked at him at Chelsea, Morata, and always thought he was nearly but not quite top-class striker. His movement was always good. His finishing could be flaky, as we saw for Spain the other night. But he's playing for Atletico. Diego Simeone saw fit to bring him into the club. He is a good player, but he's one of those, bit like Immobile for Italy. He doesn't mind a missed chance every now and again, which makes it frustrating when he's getting into those positions.
And on the other side is a guy who rarely misses chances, but at the moment isn't perhaps getting enough in a Poland shirt in Robert Lewandowski. What do you make of his situation in the national team ahead of this game?
You'll have to remind me about his situation.
Well, no, I mean, just the fact that he seems not to have quite as, certainly not as many touches in the penalty area as he does at Bayern.
Yeah.
And how Poland can get the best, I guess, out of Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's playing for a better team in Bayern, isn't he? And so it's obviously a different situation with his national team. I'm sure Lewandowski has played in better Poland teams than he's playing in at the moment. Give him a chance, there's half a chance that he'll tuck it away, but there's not many countries in this tournament that have got a centre forward of his quality, so they've got to try and make the most of him if they possibly can, just get to the ball to him in the way that England didn't get the ball to Kane quickly enough tonight. It gave the defenders a chance to go 2-on-1 quite often and just smother England centre forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So Spain against Poland is the final game on Saturday in Seville. Just going to end, Rob, on some good news regarding Christian Eriksen.
Yeah.
The Danish FA confirmed earlier he's been discharged from hospital after a successful operation and also visited his teammates in Helsingør. He's now at home with his family. And Eriksen added in that statement that he's feeling fine given the circumstances and said thanks to the world, really, for the massive number of greetings that have been said to him since that medical emergency almost a week ago.
Great news, Alan, on Christian Eriksen.
Fantastic news. Absolutely brilliant. The main concern is that he's fit and able to continue his life, his football career. Who knows on that one? But, you know, Daily Blind plays with the little piece in his chest, a little defibrillator, whatever. So who knows? But thank goodness he's fit and healthy.
Alan, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. Former England forward Alan Smith. Chris, thank you very much for joining me as well.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Well, that is it for now. A reminder as well that you can listen to the Euro 2020 show live every match night on the official app or on Euro2020.com. And you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. So keep listening. We love having you with us. See you next time at UEFA Euro 2020.
Thanks for listening to the official Euro 2020 podcast in association with Qatar Airways.